And welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature Interview. Today I have a fabulous film. I know it's called Strangers on a Train. I don't have Andre Rehal here. Where is the site you guys have this on?
We have it on Highball TV.
That's it.
It's also on Tubi as well.
Okay, so there you go, people. Free on Tubi, or go check out Highball TV. Lots of good stuff on there you guys can find out. So, welcome. Let's start at the beginning. Opening shot. I want to know why you wanted to play with the colors, adding all that pink and stuff, because that couldn't just been thing.
It was one of the references for me was with the forest. I didn't want it to look like a typical forest. The references were like I was looking at a lot of infrared photography. And so it was just we were trying to figure out, just give it a look, make it look distinct. It's not like how you would typically see a forest. So obviously, you know, because the movie starts with a dream, it's something off the top that just looks, you know, just off. It's something you normally see, but you're like, hey, why is trees are never the shade of red. So, you know, that was one reason. The other reason was the thematic reason. Red's a theme throughout the movie. So it's, you know, rooting everybody in this idea of the color red, which, you know, serves as like multiple meanings throughout the film. It's just like the confluence of emotions for the character. And so that's what the color red represents.
I also want to discuss, is this based on someone you know?
It's not so much. A little background on me. I used to work in casting.
Okay, that explains a lot right there.
So yeah, there you go. And so there was one. I used to be a session director and a session camera operator. And so I'd be in the room with a lot of these uncomfortable moments that, you know, you only get to see one of them in the film. But it's, you know, been working in the industry, like working in casting for a good chunk of time after I finished directing music videos. And it was just like, I really didn't want to have an opinion on it. It's just more so just putting it out there plain and simple and letting people decide what's up.
Okay, I'm going to call you out right there. You definitely state an opinion during this film.
It is an opinion, but it's, I don't think it's, I, you know, the intent is just to show it as is. Like, these are experiences that I've seen and.
Oh. I have no problems with that. I'm just stating, I think there's an opinion happening.
I do have an opinion, but I'm not overt. At least I hope I'm not too overt.
You're not. You're not. I'll give you
but
that.
But it's there. It informs a few things, but yeah.
How was your fun? How did you have fun shooting with drones? Because it looks like the opening shot does
We shot a bunch of stuff with drones. It was like I only had the drone for one day, so that was, you know, I wish I had it for a bit more because, you know, it was an interesting tool to use. It gives you scale for your budget, and it's, you know, a drone is very now I think it should be like an essential in a lot of people's toolkit, providing you have a reason to use it, you know, other than just giving yourself scale, but you know,
yeah. True. Okay. You introduce a mask and a costume. I wrote in the nightmare. So yeah. I presumed it was the guy was having a nightmare. He seemed to have issues with his dream constantly.
For sure. So yeah, the mask and like it's, so a lot of the stuff, a lot of the elements of the story are rooted in, Korean folklore. So it's this idea of a dokebi, which it's explained in the film, but it's like this idea of like if you bleed on an object, then you're inviting these dokebi into your house, and you know what they're there for can either be to help you or to hinder you, or you know, usually it's to help a person have like some kind of awakening, either good or bad.
So why these? Why this choice of this mask and this costume is what I wanted?
Oh, so the design of it, it was just, I thought it looked good. I found a mask previously when we were developing this project, I had a different mask completely. It was a full face covering mask. And then, you know, you're, as you are on the internet, like we all are, just thumbing away. I discovered the mask that we currently ended up using, and it kind of altered the design because it was, you know, you bring a baseball cap in and you have the hoodie and then you just have the mask, and the mask is just so pronounced. It just draws the eye. And so that's the big reason why I picked that mask. Another reason why it was a culturally significant thing, because it's like he's a second generation Korean character who lives in North America, and his parents are obviously Korean, and they have their I don't know what the best way to, like, their cultural biases or their prejudices that they brought from home. One of them being like, it's obviously a Japanese mask, and Korean, given the history between the two countries, it wouldn't be something that would be in a Korean household. But he's second generation, so he doesn't really have that baggage as his parents have, and so he would be, perfectly cool. Like, I know a lot of Korean guys who watch anime and drive Japanese cars now, and so it wasn't as big a thing as it was when I was younger growing up. I remember a very distinct memory of a Korean guy who I used to hang out with, and his dad or his grandfather was very like, go out of his way to tell you he doesn't like Japanese people. Because it was just,
Really?
yeah, just because of, like, he saw his grandson eating with chopsticks, and he was going to eat the rice with chopsticks. There's no eat with a spoon because Japanese people use
Oh,
chopsticks. And I was just
I'm
like,
learning.
well, why is that? And then, it's a big conversation for a young 8, 9 year old to be having with an adult. But, like, when you unpack from the history, it's, yeah, you're still carrying baggage from past trauma.
So the house location, was this your first choice, this house? Did everything
No,
work for
actually, it
you?
was scripted because we shot during COVID. Scripted, we were, it was a condo. I always set it in a condo, like the hallway of a condo. It was supposed to be like this, I didn't think it would be a problem to get a condo. But obviously COVID made that very hard because it wasn't a problem finding a condo to shoot in. It was more so the hallway of the condo because a good chunk of the film takes place in the hallway. Previously. And so we exhausted every condo we could kind of find and kept getting no's for the hallways, especially, this is 2021, so we're still in COVID. And we happened upon the house. Funnily enough, the house that we shot in, we weren't initially supposed to see. There was a unit below that we were looking at that didn't work out. And the person who owned the house was like, well, we're moving out like next week. Do you want to see the upstairs and we can rent that out to you? And we walked through. I was there. Thankfully, I was there with my production designer and my cinematographer. And we walked through and we're like, this place will work really well. There's a lot of angles to shoot through. You have spaces and seeing through, and then the high ceilings and that kind of thing. And so it managed to work. It was a really good runner up. I think the place had character, and so that aided us.
I'm going to go to the second location I want to discuss, and I'm going back to a question that just came to my
Sure.
head. The photo studio, is that still the house then? And you just set it up there?
Like the audition studio? No,
Yes.
that's actually a functioning audition studio because I worked in the industry so long, I just called in a favor and was asked. And that's Milestones on Lakeshore here. It's in Toronto. It's, I used to work there. I walked down the street. It's like a 20, 30 minute walk for me. And that was, yeah, that's where I used to work.
Yeah. You said you used to direct music videos, right? Did I
I
hear you
did.
right? And now this is your first feature?
Yeah, it's been a long, it was a long time
How
coming.
different is it to go up on a day shoot? I guess I'm guessing, I'm
Pretty
presuming a
much,
day
yeah.
to shoot a music video,
Pretty
to
much,
go
yeah.
shooting a film in 9 or 10 days, and you're in charge now.
It's, yeah. So, I mean, thankfully we had 20, it was a 20-day shoot. It was, it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. It was more so because I think the hardest part of the whole process, it wasn't actually the making of the film. It was just the financing of it. That was the real difficult part, because like the making of the film is like the fun part. You get to go, you get to play. It's 20 days, so it's just being mindful of making your days. And I had to work with, like, there's different things I've had to learn that I didn't have with music videos. One of those is working with a bonder, basically somebody who's bonding your film
Oh.
from the financiers. And it's just like, if you aren't making your days, they can replace you. And so that was a little bit of stress, but I was making my days, so it was all right.
So the music for your film, did that come from people you know from your other industry?
So funnily enough, Baby Kojo, he's the guy who he's a good friend of mine. I've known him for a long time. I actually, when we were developing it, I always intended to use his songs. I was going to license them either way, and he was, it was his music basically was what I was listening to help me form the script and what have you. And it's very, I'm a type of person when I make stuff, music is usually my first way in. I'll hear something that'll make me think about things and help me visualize and that kind of thing. And so his music was very much helping me visualize the piece. And so it was when I got the project, I licensed his songs and I asked him to come in and help with the score as well.
Yeah, I want to back that up a bit. So when you were getting this idea in your head, did it come from a music idea or did it come from walking down the street, listening
For
to
the
your
film,
iPod? Yeah.
the film was mostly about like so I as I was working in casting, it's a very like it's a very time consuming job because you're there, my average day was 12 hours, which is like I left the film industry to have work less hours, and now I'm working film industry hours elsewhere. And so yeah, it was like I'm working 12 to 18 hour days. And so it didn't leave a lot of time to go and shoot stuff on my own. And so it was like write what you know. But I was trying to initially when I wrote the script, I was thinking like, okay, if I can't finance it, I can't get anybody to help me make it. I'll shoot it on a phone for about like 10K. So that kind of
Wow.
that would brought down the like what the whole thing needed to be, right? So the initial idea was just an actor who's falling in, out of love with acting. I had watched, I don't know if you're a Coen Brothers fan, but I'd watched Inside Llewyn Davis, which is a movie about failure, essentially. It's about a guy who can't, he's struggling and trying to get a shot, can't get a shot. And that was like, I was like, oh, wow, this is, it was pretty inspiring because it's like, when you're working in casting, I would see, you see the same people for like every week, coming in for every audition and that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, certain people just disappear and you never see them again. And you're like, what is that story? What happened? Why did they quit? What was it? What was the straw that broke the camel's back? Kind of an idea. And so that's what the start of the story was. And since I was already in the ecosystem, it's just using that truth to form the story.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin the end of the film, but you take that idea you just gave me to the extreme, I would say. You take it to the very, very end. You could take it.
I mean, it's pretty like some people think it's extreme. I don't know. It's just sometimes it's for me, not like since we're talking cryptically and we don't want to give it away, it's if it's something is hurting a person, I think of it as like, well, no, is that character or is that person losing it all, or is it just you need sometimes you need to take a step back to then reassess and then reevaluate and then go take another step forward. And even with myself, it was my part of that is like my frustration with my own journey and like how long it took me to get a feature. And it's is it gonna happen? If not, when? And then if you find you become bitter because of the industry. It's like, do I still want to keep doing this? Because it's how many times can you hit your head before you realize like, hey man, I gotta stop hitting my head. It's not good for me.
Fair enough. The vaping shot. Did you work on that vaping shot or is that corrected?
Which one? The high angle one where he's
That's, you got it.
yeah, so that one, no, he so John who plays Jay, he we've just had like these vapes that are like green tea vapes, and yeah, he really liked them, so he just kept smoking them, and so he got pretty good with giving us big clouds.
Really? So I'm just going to go into this for a second. So it's just green tea. There's nothing else in it.
As far as I know, it's just like a tea. It's supposed to be like a relaxing kind of vape.
Okay. I did not know that.
Yeah, we were trying to get them to like give us a bunch to sponsor us. Or my producer had worked out something, and then he showed them the script, and then they were like, "No, we don't want we don't want our brand associated with this." It
Really? I don't think it was that bad.
wasn't that bad, but I think it was like because it's a placeholder for marijuana, essentially. So,
True, but I think you were fine.
yeah, I thought so too, but I'm sure a room of suits thought otherwise.
Suits are the problem. See, suits aren't real people.
I mean, the people, but they're serving a different master than you and I.
Exactly. Okay, shooting at night along the water, what lights were involved?
I think it was so there's the practicals from the where we shot in Hamilton, that's right under the bridge. And so it was the they had converted like on one side it was sodium vapor because they hadn't converted them to LEDs. We had LEDs, and then what we did was we manufactured a light, just a, basically a China ball that hung over him for the whole way. And
Okay, was
we
somebody holding that then?
so we put it in a cart. We put it out a camera cart, and we just because we just walked along with them. We had a Movi,
Okay.
so it you know all we had to do was follow the action. I actually shot that. We shot a lot of stuff that didn't end up in that scene. Truth be told, it was like the movie that you actually see is a lot more condensed than the script. The script had a another narrative that we cut out just for time and because of confusion and that kind of thing. But yeah, that scene was like, I remember shooting, we shot a lot of footage for that scene. And then what ended up was like, you know, two, three shots. So it's pain of the game.
Did your actor really play guitar or no? Because
So John can sing and he can he can't dance, but he can sing and he can act.
interesting, because you never show his hands. I wrote down in my notes because I was looking to see him.
I think there was the one like we had one shot where it was his hands, but you know, I played the faces more because it's like we couldn't I couldn't get a shot, a good shot of him, you know, with the two of them because the way the door was, it was so narrow that if I pulled back wide, I'd have to pick who I wanted to see. So
Okay.
constraints of the room dictated I have to shoot it this way.
See, these are the questions you need answered. See, you get weird questions from me. I'm like, let's discuss that
Oh,
angle.
that's fine. That's good.
Smoke is coming out of the mask. How'd you do this one?
It's pretty simple. That was so that same vape. The person, so the guy who played the demon, or the Dokebi, I should say, he was also the guy who played the neighbor in the film,
Oh, okay.
and he's my co-writer also of the film. So when I asked him to do it, he was game, and then he just, you know, he really hated it because it was we had to put him in a morph suit, and then we. I had a lighting attachment to him that was for keying, so then we could key the eyes, and then it was just layer after layer on him. And then so to get the vape, the good thing about the suit is all he had to do was lift the mask, and the morph suit was thin enough that he could just suck it down, and then he would just hold it and then let it out. Sometimes it was like aided. We aided some of them with like compositing to make him bigger, but you know, for the most part, it's just like him exhaling.
Pile of papers in the cupboard. Where did they come from?
Which ones? Sorry,
He opens the cupboard and there's just a pile of papers.
Oh, it's just more so like, you know, we all have a cupboard. Like I have a cupboard right now just full of stuff that I just put stuff in and I never look at. And it's just that spring cleaning kind of thing. It's just accumulation.
I have a question on the writing. You said, what do you do when you hate your dream, as said in the film? What do you do? Like, you wrote this, so I'm thinking this
That's
is
the
based
question.
on you.
It's still the question. Like, that is still a very good question. What do you do? Like, what do you do when you hate your dream? Like, it's very tough to make change when you've kind of defined yourself. Like, I'll look at it like this for myself. It's like I'm a filmmaker. I've always wanted to do this professionally for the longest time. Now that I've made my first feature, and now I'm currently making my second one. It's a question of like, okay, it took me this long to do it, but do I still enjoy it? Because if you don't enjoy it, then this job really sucks because it's very hard. It's a very hard industry to be in. And so if you do not enjoy it, it's not, it's not going to be good. And so what do you do? Like, for a lot of people, this is a lot of people's dream to be working in the entertainment industry. And so what happens when you just don't like it anymore? And that's, to me, I wrestle with that question, because I'm like, I still like it, but like, what happens when I don't? Like, what's the option? Like, it feels like, you're kind of boxed in a certain regard, but you're not really, to be honest with you. Like, I think if you have passion for whatever it is, for me, I know if I can just be creative, I'm pretty happy.
Where did you find your actor? I mean, you for your script, you need something very distinct. I think you could have done it with maybe a different person, but I don't think it would have worked as well if you went different
No,
ethnicity.
so it's funny, John and I, so John and I've known John, so back to music videos, like that's how I met John. I met John when I was doing like, so he was friends with the artist, and he was, they're from BC, and they came to Toronto to shoot the video. And so he was their ride. He was driving him around, he was hanging out, and we just started talking. And John and I had a lot in common. He's wanting to act, and I was giving him advice and this and that. And then we reconnected in casting. And I said, hey man, I had this idea, and he actually would be perfect for this idea, because he checks a lot of boxes. He can sing, he can play guitar, he's obviously an actor, so that's very close to home. And yeah, it was, we have a lot in common in terms of, like, we actually have, both of us have the same birthday, so that
Oh,
was
there you go. Then you're totally
the same
set to
energy.
go.
So I was just like, all right man, you can be my avatar for this. That was John was from the jump, and he had a lot of input on character, also with a lot of the Korean elements for this, because obviously I'm not Korean.
Nope. I can vouch for you.
Yeah, I'm obviously not Korean, so he was there to make sure we're respecting the culture and making sure everything's, crossing our T's, dotting our I's. Obviously, he doesn't know everything, but doing our best.
So from there, you're Canadian. I'm Canadian. I know how hard it is to find funding in Canada.
For sure.
And you were discussing that earlier with the suit. So, I mean, you did, must have some background ability to fundraise with music videos. You must know some people, I'm thinking.
So, well, music videos for me, way back when, it would be, a lot of it, if you're working with a band, then everybody throws in money, and that's one way to do it. Like, that's the independent way to do it. The other way was writing grants, which I became very good at, writing grants. And then, it's basically playing the lotto, essentially. You write your grant. If they like the music, great. And then you would get your $10,000 to $60,000 to go make something. And then, that it's a very, because it's, you had a lot of production companies that were doing this, and so it was contingent on these grants holding. And so once the grants are gone, a lot of music video production companies folded, like pretty much overnight, because that was the way they essentially was subsidizing that industry. And once it left, I saw the writing was on the wall, because I'm like, they're giving less and less for these things. I better find an exit. And so my exit was going into casting, with hopes of, like, breaking into, like getting into the CFC and then breaking into TV or doing a feature or something like that. But casting ended up eating a lot of my life. And once we, so just at the start of the pandemic, I got in touch with Matt, who runs Highball, and he was starting this whole thing up at Highball. And I got hired. I currently am employed by Highball. I'm the data management or assets manager or something. I don't even know my title. But it's, I handle like intake of the basically the movies that we have on the site, QC, building our own art for it, building that kind of stuff. And so that was where I was working. And then the opportunity, because Highball is a broadcaster that entitles us to tax credits, so investors came in there. On that side, Matt was able to make his feature, and then they made Mother of All Shows. And since I was a filmmaker, I was like, hey man,
It's my turn.
can I have one too? And he's like, yeah, why not? And so We that's basically how the film got made, essentially. We were using
Cool.
the financing structures that they had in place, and that allowed me to make my first film.
Cool. I'm going to move on to fun questions. I think I've covered everything. I don't think I ruined a thing. I did pretty good.
Hey, that's great.
I mean, I could go into a few things, but that's got to be off air. Okay, your first time on the show, your favorite film?
That's a tough one, man. I have a lot of films I watch every year.
Okay, those are good.
One of the films I tend to come back to, Harakiri, which is a samurai film.
Excellent film.
Back to the Future is
Of
one
course.
I never Heat, Out of Sight. What else?
Look at you.
Tokyo Drifter.
Hang
There's
on.
a
Are you talking about Fast and Furious 3?
no, Tokyo Drifter. Like, it's a Seijin Suzuki movie from like the 60s. It's
I've
like,
never seen it.
oh, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's like if you're into the Criterion Channel, which
I
I'm
am.
imagining you are, you can just check it out on there, man. He makes
Okay.
really crazy movies. He's like it's very experimental type stuff, and it's like, you know, there's it's very pulpy. There's a lot of I don't know. It's it, like what you call an exploitation film. It's like a Japanese
Cool.
exploitation film. So that one's
Nice.
great. Hong Kong wise, I love Hard Boiled. John Woo was a big. I'm a big John Woo fan. So Hard Boiled and the Killer, right up there. And then from Korea, I'm a Kim Ji Woon fan. So it would be I Saw the Devil and A Bittersweet Life. Those are the top. And Old
Those,
Boy. Old Boy's
a
a
lot of
classic.
good films there for people to watch. I hope they've seen most of them.
Hopefully.
One person you will work with in the future.
That I will work with
It's Fantasyland, so pick your person.
Fantasyland. Who am I feeling right now? Who would I mean, there's a guy, Dev Patel, I'd like to work with. I think I could
Love Dev Patel.
make something. I liked Monkey Man a lot, and I was like, okay, yeah, I could, like, he's a guy I would like to work with. Who else? I mean, if we're shooting for the
They could be listening to this. You never know. I
yeah,
hope
like,
so.
you're listening to shooting for the rafters. I mean, there's Denzel Washington's guy, George Clooney, maybe. I don't know. Like,
George Clooney, you might get Denzel's fussy. I think he's fussy on his choices
course, well, I
sometimes.
mean, rightfully so. I mean, he's got a image to protect.
Besides Tokyo Drifter, which I had never heard of, which is on my list now, one unseen movie that people should be watching.
Unseen movie. Oh, you know, there's a movie I'm surprised a lot of people didn't like, and it's got Robert Pattinson in it. It's The Rover with
I've seen it.
Guy Pearce.
Yep, I saw it.
You know, it's a post-apocalyptic, the great cinematography, really, like, I love the tone of the film. It's very like subdued for the type of movie it is, and it's such a post-apocalyptic movie that, like, I'm like, oh, it's like I could see this. You know what I mean? It's rooted in like right now. It's like a near apocalypse, I would say. That would be on my list.
So
One.
before I let you go, everyone, his film's on Tubi, Eyeball TV. Check it out. Thank you for your time and have a great day.
Thanks, you as well. Appreciate it.